Blog Talk Radio.
Necessarily smart, but they
you know, he's a 70-year-old guy, and he didn't get by in this world by being completely stupid. So, you know, everybody says that he's given an introspection and deep thought and reflection. I don't know whether he is or he isn't. What I do know that he is very, very canny. And what that suggests to me is that he knows exactly what he's doing at every minute he's doing it. Now, the latest example of this is the Hamilton musical. Apparently, Mike Pence, his vice presidential pick, went to see the show. I don't know how they got tickets, but, you know, I guess if they're paying top dollar for the tickets, are close to $1,000 now. So I guess if you're willing to pay that, you can get tickets, you know, and I guess the show, these people will be on crutches and walkers before I pay that kind of money to see it. And Lin-Manuel is no longer heading up the cast anyway, so I think the window of opportunity for me to see it has long passed. But anyway, the show's headliner, the guy that has taken Manuel's place, apparently got a note at the end of the show and read it to Pence. It was very respectful. Basically, you know, he was making a plea that Trump be more inclusive and hold up the promise of America. And you got to forgive me, I don't have any water in the studio. And, you know, Trump took to Twitter, you know, defaming the cast and claiming that they had disrespected and harassed Pence. And nothing was further from the truth. It was a bunch of hyperbole. And, you know, it's interesting because Trump could take the time to send out these tweets about Hamilton's cast allegedly harassing Pence, who himself has denied, and we have that up on our Twitter feed. So if you guys want to take a look at that, go to www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net or eastnewyorkmanagement.com, and you can see where we posted a couple of articles with Fox News, where Pence is himself denying that he felt that he was harassed or insulted, you know, in stark contrast to the false comments, you know, lies, let's call them what they are. And I told you last week that there is just so much with this presidency that I don't even know where to begin. The conflicts of interest that are ongoing, that we hear virtual radio silence from the press, and that is the other thing that's you know, hurting us, because this normalization of an abnormal candidacy is going to inevitably devolve into a corrupt presidency. It's inevitable. Here Trump was at Bedminster. He apparently owns a world-class golf course there in New Jersey, vetting potential candidates for high-level offices in his administration. And he also takes the time to meet with business interests in India, you know, from India, I might add. Which is unethical. It's, you can't do it. If you're president or president-elect, which is not a legal term, but we just use it because it's easier than just saying Donald Trump, you cannot be involved in interests that conflict with your role as president. And he said that his children, his adult children, are going to run the business. I see no evidence of that, and then we also see press silence on the fact that Ivanka Trump, his daughter, 35, I believe she's the old, well, Trump Jr. might be the oldest, but at any rate, she sits in, her and her husband, Jared Kushner, sits in on a meeting with the Japanese Prime Minister. I mean, you. The press, you know, they said a little something about it and then quickly moved off into Never Never Land of normalization. Ivanka Trump, neither Ivanka Trump nor Jared Trump have security clearances enabling them to sit in on any meeting with a foreign head of state. And we hear absolutely radio silence from the press about this normalization process. And this is going to continue because people are actually going to believe that this man is going to do what he said he's going to do, which is impossible if you look at it from a purely economic perspective. The weaker support, and by we, I mean I'm socially liberal and fiscally conservative, will always happen. That's why I'm unaffiliated. And I'm an election judge. And when one of the chief judges comes to me because a voter has a problem, they have to have people from opposing parties help the voter. It can't be a Republican or a Democrat helping the party, you know, helping the voter. So, you know, I'm able to help, you know, candidates. I'm able to work with Republicans and Democrats alike, which is unusual because I am unaffiliated. The point I'm trying to make, however, is that there is already evidence that Trump's proposed infrastructure bill, which I think is good. I think that the Republicans in Congress obstructed Obama from enacting a similar jobs creating bill to rebuild the infrastructure. Because, you know, the one thing, you give credit where credit is due. And I don't think Trump was the first one that raised this as an issue. An important issue is that what makes any country a first world as opposed to a second or third world country is its infrastructure. That's a fact. And the infrastructure in the United States has been deteriorating dramatically for the last 30 or 40 years because much of the infrastructure is over 100 years old. The Republicans, however, have not wanted to spend money on it, preferring instead to squander money on radically advanced weaponry, weapon systems that are unneeded. I mean, why do we need more weapons of mass destruction? It's just incredible. So, at any rate, I do agree with Trump that the infrastructure in this country needs to be repaired. Because you go to these other countries, he's absolutely right, Singapore and China, and they have gleaming 21st century airports, conveyor belts to carry persons from one part of the airport to the other. And here in some of our major cities, definitely here in New York, Kennedy and LaGuardia and the next closest major international airport, which is Newark Liberty, are disgusting crap holes. I mean, there's no other way to characterize them. They look awful, especially LaGuardia. LaGuardia looks like something out of the 40s, World War II. It's astonishing how they've, you know, they, not that they didn't build it correctly. They just basically remodeled LaGuardia, which I believe was, in fact, an Army Air Force base at one point. The point I'm trying to make is that what Trump proposes to do about this is to create a private public partnership using public monies to select cronies to build or rebuild these projects and then take the lion's share of the revenue from the projects instead of using public funding mechanism like bond issuance and servicing the debt on those bonds, and then hiring contractors, prime contractors and subcontractors to actually build these things. So in essence, in short, what he proposes to do is to hire, crony capitalism is no other way to parse it, is to hire his friends and buddies, you know, people with close ties to Republican Congress or the Republican Party, Republican National Committee, and reward them, basically, and let them take the lion's share. And then, you know, probably what we'll get is subpar construction with high rates of return for them, but low rates of use for us. And it's just astonishing that, you know, there's a lot of these pieces that we're talking about, the fact that he hasn't divested control of his company, which is required under ethics rules. These people can get on these talk radio shows on Sunday, and I'm not an ethics lawyer by any means, stretch of the imagination, but you don't have to be one to know that there is an inherent conflict of interest for a Trump administration or Trump himself to simultaneously be doing business, negotiating deals that he might personally profit from while president of the United States. It's just astonishing. And this is one of the great fears, beyond his bigotry and misogyny and sexism. This is one of the greatest fears I had personally of a Trump president, because I know the guy is you know, even Romney said it. The guy is a show-off. He's unethical. He's corrupt, and he's a con man. And if history is an indicator of what he has been like in the past, then, you know, we can expect that Trump will enrich himself and his children and his friends to the detriment of the rest of the country. Stay tuned.
Looking for a hit multimedia management company that can manage you, your service, product, or your next multimedia project? Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level. At East New York Management, we can produce and post-produce your project into a sleek finished product. We write scripts, slow-mos, blurbs, and spots that are tight, hot, and funky. Liners that flow smoothly with wit as well as with verb. We also manage talent, produce, and post-produce shows that are on the cutting edge, reflecting the undeniable influence of hip-hop on pop culture. The most important thing that we can bring to your product is energy, enthusiasm, and a love for the creative process. Look for us on the World Wide Web at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Call us at 347-846-8447 or email us at contact@eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Do not waste another minute with whack, boring, and uncreative multimedia and talent management companies. Bring your talent or project to East New York Management. Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level.
You're back tuned into Mark and Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis Shipman. It's 30 degrees and cloudy here in Brooklyn, New York. And we've been talking about the presidency or the candidacy, and now he hasn't been inaugurated yet, so we don't want to call him President Trump. But the candidacy of Trump and his transition, and so far his transition hasn't encouraged or reassured any fair-minded journalist, voter, constituent, pundit, citizen, that the Trump administration is going to be anything other than a wholly corrupt bastion of mediocrity. The persons that he has so far selected for his inner circle, Rex Priebus, I have nothing to really say about him much, but Stephen Breitbart, and for counselor, which means that he has the last word in Trump's ear, is frightening. Because the guy, you know, they can get on the talk shows all they want, his supporters and apologists. The guy's an unmitigated racist. That's a fact. These guys are all, to a person, older white men, and you know what that means for minorities. That means that they are hostile. They're not enlightened progressives that are going to champion the rights of minorities or any other segment of society that doesn't look like them. It's that simple. And this is why, you know, the article I was reading about Milwaukee, where a lot of black folks said that, you know, they felt that Clinton was as corrupt if not as worse than Trump. And I don't agree with that. I believe that Hillary Clinton was a flawed candidate. There's no doubt about it. And I also believe she was a liar. And she told some stupid lies. And I didn't understand it. I didn't understand her need to be as defensive as she was. If you make a mistake, I mean, people respect you more. Of course. Was she going to have people that were going to use her apologies? Of course. But it would have been far better in terms of people believing in you if you would have just come clean and said, hey, you know, I used a private server because I wanted to protect my privacy, and I apologize. But she wouldn't do it. Oh, was permitted. Permitted by who? Who did you ask? Because you certainly didn't go to the IG at State and say, hey, can I, or their Office of Ethics, and say, hey, can I use a private server for my email? No. So that is an unmitigated lie, and she continued to say it over and over and over again. Then the Benghazi stuff. You know, people lost their lives. But she was ineffective in pushing back successfully against that, despite the fact that the Republicans had cut the State Department's budget specifically for... they have a section of the State Department, and I can't think of the name now, and I should have, because I wasn't going to do a segment on this. But they it's called Diplomatic Security, I believe, and they had cut that budget severely. And it was cut by persons much lower down the food chain than Hillary Clinton. I mean, the Secretary of State, let's be honest about it. She doesn't run the show. She's the chief diplomat, the face, the figurehead of the State Department, but those grade 15s and 18s, those are the people that are making the hard, fast decisions. The deputy assistant secretaries, those are the people at that level that make those policy decisions for the State Department. So when the Republican Congress started cutting funding, the budget for the State Department, one of the things that was adversely impacted was diplomatic security. The other part of it is, and had she made that case, she would have probably been successful instead of this denial, you know, which fed right into the Republican narrative that she was a dishonest candidacy. The other thing is, and this would have been a much more difficult argument to make, but it would have been a truthful argument nonetheless. The ambassador who was killed in Benghazi, which is Libya, you know, everybody says Benghazi, 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 and, you know, we know that Americans are geographically challenged. Benghazi is in Libya, which is in North Africa. For those of us in our listening audience that are challenged by geography, and those that want to join the show, give us a call here at 215-383-3872, 215-383-3872. Was a known hothead, was known to be reckless. And I'm not speaking ill of the dead. The guy would jog without security. I mean, who does that? This guy is an ambassador, which is the top-ranking diplomat a foreign government or our government sends to a foreign country to represent it. So when you're in that position possessing high-level security clearances and information that if disclosed through torture or that sort of thing could put a lot of persons at risk, you employ, you adhere to a strict security protocol. And from all objective reports, the ambassador that was killed there was very, very reckless and did not adhere strictly to security protocol. And so there were, you know, there's two sides to the story, and I believe that Clinton had less to do with the attack in Benghazi beyond the fact that, you know, she just, for whatever reason, I have no clue. I don't propose to substitute my judgment for her. I have no clue why she just doesn't feel a need to be truthful, and I think that hurt us. you know, the bottom line is that hurt us. I think that if Hillary Clinton was a better candidate, we would not be at this critical impasse in our nation and our body politic, because I can tell you folks, and I've been telling friends and family before, during, and after, we're on the cusp of a race war in this country. And part of the problem is going to be Donald Trump refusing, fueling the flame by taking us backwards and refusing to concede that there is a problem with race relations in this country and that the police aren't always correct. Jeff Sessions, and we just posted it on our is case in point. He has said outright that investigating racism in police departments by the DOJ, which he is poised to head up as Attorney General, amounts to an abuse of federal authority. Jeff Sessions, a known racist, poised to head up the last remaining bulwark. I don't think Loretta Lynch did a good job. She, you know, and I wrote about this weekend. She had a window of opportunity to shape or reshape the Justice Department, especially the Civil Rights Division, which was a disaster and has been a disaster for years, by ordering DOJ prosecutors to prosecute Eric Garner's killer, who the Staten Island District Attorney in New York refused to prosecute, said he did nothing wrong. We see a big black man being choked to death in living color, but everybody else sees somebody resisting. I didn't see anybody resisting, and I watched that video, and it was very painful as a black man to watch another black man being strangled to death on television, and you know, white folks running around saying that, you know, he was resisting, or, you know, beyond the fact that the technique employed by the police officer is banned. That alone should have resulted in that police officer, at the very least, I'm talking about at the least, being terminated. Loretta Lynch did nothing. Even as U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York, which is the role that she held prior to becoming nominated by President Obama and installed as Attorney General. So, you know, all these apologists, these Negroes that are running around trying to normalize the Trump presidency, they're going to be the ones hollering the loudest when they come home and catch their elder, or when they go and visit and catch their elderly parents eating cat food to pay for prescriptions because they've eliminated Medicare, which serves the elderly and the disabled. And it's absolutely outrageous, because we knew that all these programs were at risk, yet we sat there on our behinds and allowed this man to walk in office, because if you didn't vote, that was essentially a vote for Trump. And we're going to talk about this more during the coming weeks right here on Marketing Pulpit International. Thanks for listening, and try to have a good week.